The 1982 hit film Tootsie captivated audiences with its story of an actor so thirsty to get a job that he cross-dressed as a woman and became America's sweetheart feminist icon. The movie was nominated for 10 Oscars, but considering the progress in the visibility of trans actors, writers, and directors, the notion that only a man cross-dressing as a woman can do a woman's job seems a little outdated.
Today we're taking a look at the new Broadway musical Tootsie that aims to update the classic love story of a boy meets girl, boy dresses up as girl, and then girls fall in love.
Plus, Norway doesn't give a fuck about airing cuss words on the latest episode of Alt for Norge.
Alyssa Edwards' reality TV series Dancing Queen debuts on Netflix.
And the One Star Is Born spoiler you might want to hear before seeing the film. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Feast of Fun is made possible because of fabulous people just like you. Thank you. Become a member and support this show at feastoffun.com/plus.
Being an actor is weird. You're using your mind and body to channel the words and feelings and emotions of somebody else. You have to succumb to the approval of a casting director, a writer, a producer, and of course, the audience, who, if you're good at it and succeed, will think you've done nothing at all. Being an actor means being someone else and making it pass as your authentic self. Now, in the film Tootsie in 1982, it was very well explored when we took a look at the world of Dustin Hoffman and these actors in New York City who are chomping at the bit to get roles. As Shakespeare once said, all the world's a stage and we are merely players. Feminist writer Susan Sontag said gender is one of the most important roles people play. So when it was time to update the modern story of Tootsie into a new musical, the writers had an opportunity to inject it with trans consciousness and visibility. And unfortunately, they chose not to. Today, we're taking a look at the new musical adaptation of Tootsie based on the 1982 film by Sidney Pollack.
And I'd like to say, you know, the show is funny. It's got lots of great laughs. You know, there's stuff happening and you're like, wow, this is really funny. But there is, you know, as queer people know, if you're a straight person and you go in there and you're not quote unquote woke, you're not going to get it. But as somebody who's, you know, interested in trans stories and cross-dressing stories and stories of drag queens and stuff, I wanted a bit of a queer sensibility to it. Mm-hmm. And it does not have that kind of sense of queer visibility. And you're also kind of wondering, it just nauseated to you a little bit while you're watching this. You're just like, where's the transness? Where's the queerness in it?
And there's no LGBT representation, I would say, in the writing and this performance and stuff. And at the core, I think the original film by Sidney Pollack, starring, you know, Dustin Hoffman and Jessica Lange, Terry Garr, Dabney Coleman, I mean, such a great villain.
I mean, many great people.
It was Gina Davis's film debut. Did you know that?
What did she play in that?
She played the attractive co-star that got Dustin Hoffman all nervous when they had to share a dressing room together.
Oh, that's sexy Gina Davis.
With her tits all hanging out. And at the core of Tootsie, I think it was the exploring the idea that being an actor is physically and mentally demanding. And it creates this, you know, nonsensical premise that Dustin Hoffman in 1982 could cross-dress as a woman and get cast in a soap opera because he was such a great actor.
And there was no women around that could do the role that he could do, right?
It was an outrageous premise. Yeah. He was, you know, and he was seen by all his friends, hit by his agent, by when he finally reveals in the film that he is a cross-dresser. Not in real life, but in trying to get this role, he's seen as a piece of shit. He's seen as a deceptive person, and everything comes hilariously unraveling. Mm-hmm. And I think what was fun for me as a kid watching the film Tootsie was seeing the silliness of dressing up in drag and having everybody treat Dustin Hoffman's Dorothy Michaels as the real deal.
Because it was obvious, you know, did Dorothy Michaels pass as a woman? You know, that's the question, is did he pass? And you're kind of like, I guess so. You know, everybody kind of believed it. And so that was the thing, is like, you're like, oh, I'm getting one over on somebody. But nowadays, I mean, our thinking about that has really just kind of changed. You know, before people thought about, you know, trans people as they're trying to deceive people or they're lying about who they are. And so now things have really, you know, we've come, for the most part, as a nation, as a culture, around to the notion that they're just living their authentic self. And we're not seeing, you know, is this guy as Dorothy Michaels, is he living his authentic self?
Well, and in the film Tootsie, and in I think like a lot of cross-dressing films, like, you know, Mrs. Doubtfire, there's always a mechanism of how this cisgendered straight white guy is able to effortlessly turn himself into a woman. Yeah, there's always like the gay best friend, or right. there might be another transgender right. person, or another woman who's assisting him in the deception in order for a greater lofty goal. And I think, you know, Dustin Hoffman's character in the original film, he's kind of a weasel. He's portrayed as a difficult actor who is desperate. And then he gets cast in this role and he discovers the burden that women have to go under in the modern world, right? And that's where the feminist angle starts popping up, and it becomes really interesting to watch. And it was, of course, you know, celebrated at the Oscars. It got 10 nominations, I believe it was Jessica Lange who won Best Supporting Actress for her role in the film.
Well, the thing about it, too, is like, you know, you talk about that mechanism, and for, you know, a lot of people, the idea of forced feminization is like, you have to become a woman or else, like, to get this done. For a lot of people, and probably a lot of people in Hollywood, directors, people financing this kind of stuff, to them, it's a bit of a sexual fetish. Because, like, if you search, like, online for forced feminization, it's, you know, it's a way of being dominated. It's a way of being submissive to, like, a mistress, you know, and maybe that mistress is the stage. But the idea that you have to, you know, come down as your privileged station of a man to become a woman, you know, some people, they find like a catharsis in that.
And I feel like I got really excited when I heard that it was being turned into a musical in 2018. And this is a musical that was developed by lyricist David Yazbek and sitcom writer Robert Horn, who he was behind all bunch of different sitcoms. He wrote
Designing Women and
Designing Women like he basically created and wrote most of the seasons of Designing Women. So these are people who are really great at developing comedies, and you know, I feel like the sorry, I'm channeling Dorothy Michaels here.
Is that Dorothy Michaels or Lady Bunny?
Yeah, right.
What's the difference?
Well, I think Lady Bunny
is a little higher.
Is a little bit higher and brings a little sass. Where Dorothy Michaels, she's just a little bit more sick. And you know, she talks like a machine gun. And you cannot do that, miss. You need to sit back down. So it was interesting to see this beloved film adapted for a modern audience. And I have to say, Tootsie the Musical really succeeds as a comedy. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I think it's at the cost of ignoring the brutal reality that transgender people go through, that cross-dressers go through, that LGBT people go through. And it is a missed opportunity to modernize it by actually including those kind of voices in this story.
Right. And that's what people talk about. They want visibility. They want representation. This was a great opportunity to bring in somebody, to get somebody on your team to promote that visibility, because it would have just made it more palatable, I think, to, you know, to queer audiences. You know, now, if you're a person that doesn't even really think about this stuff, if you're just laughing because it's a man in a dress, you're going to enjoy it, because it is funny. But, you know, are you going to leave that theater singing the songs?
Well, I think some of the songs, you know, certainly stand out and are very memorable. Certainly, you know, the woman who plays Terry Garr's character of Sandy Lester, Sarah Stiles, she has a song that goes like, that's all about her anxiety as a young woman living in New York. And it's like, and I feel like that song was very catchy and echoing some of my favorite musical moments from how to get ahead in business without really trying is great. And I feel like Tootsie the Musical is really a love story for a tribute to all these great moments in Broadway musicals and film. And it certainly references all kinds of really fun things from, you know, Chorus Line to Evita. There's one scene when we're sort of like seeing how famous Tootsie is getting, right? Dorothy Michael's character. And it's very referencing Evita's moments, you know, when they're sort of surrounding her with mirrors and she becomes this, this superstar,
icon.
This
and that's
icon.
When she comes marching out in the red sequin dress.
The iconic,
like, oh, the
dress,
iconic
yeah.
moment, you know, for the Tootsie moment.
Now, what is Santino Fontana? He plays the villain, Prince, I think it's Eric in Frozen?
Hans, right?
Hans, yeah. Correct. He's the redhead
villain.
He's
the one that tries to seduce Anna.
Correct. And you know, we find out he's a shithead later in the film. What is his 2018 portrayal of one of the most famous cross-dressing characters in all film is going to be like? And it's interesting that they don't want you to see what he looks like in any press. I've asked the Broadway and Chicago people for photos. Nothing.
Nothing of him in drag.
No photos of him in drag. So I'm going to lay it out for you guys. Imagine if Dana Carvey's church lady is not special.
A little younger church lady.
Not that much younger. And John Epperson's Lipsinka had a homely woman.
The fashion was very Lipsinka, so it really threw back to like that kind of 50s, right?
They call it the Dolce Vita, very Italian dress, and you know, tearaway skirts to
Fellini. And so I think, you know, for those kinds of dresses are really great for drag because you have this big giant dress on the bottom, so it makes your big hulking shoulders not look so massive, right?
And so a lot of the technique and sensibilities of both of those characters, and certainly people like us who are very familiar with, you know, drag and cross-dressing and all kinds of medium culture are quickly going to pick up on Dana Carvey's church lady and certainly John Epperson's Lipsinka. There's a lot of that DNA in this character. And so, as you know, is Santino Fontana going to have to lip sync for his life? Is he going to have to sashay away? It's going to be up to the folks in New York City. You know, the show really needs a queer rewrite. It needs to include LGBT writers. It needs trans visibility, and it has none of that. So it's going to have a really hard time selling to mainstream audiences on the Great White Way.
Well, I think that's, you know, also interesting too, is like, so not only does this person, you know, cross dress as a woman to land a role, because she lands this role and it's, you know, it's the premise is ridiculous. So she lands a role in this play. It's a retelling of Romeo and Juliet, where Romeo dies, Juliet's still alive, so she's going to like run off with Romeo's brother, right?
Well, because in the original film Tootsie, it takes place in a soap opera.
Yes.
In the musical, it takes place in a stage adaptation, a remake of Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah, like a Broadway show, because, you know, Broadway shows love Broadway shows about Broadway shows, right?
Hollywood films love Hollywood films about Hollywood films.
And so, you know, and so the love interest, the person that would have been the Jessica Lange, is this actress. She's a beautiful African-American actress. And so she's playing Juliet.
Lily Cooper.
And so the family, like, so he's playing the nurse, which is often sometimes played by a man in drag, you know, in theaters.
In Shakespeare.
Well, in Shakespeare, yeah, then and even now sometimes. Like, we just had Muffy Fishbasket on the podcast not too long ago, and she talked about that was one of her first acting roles in drag, was as the nurse. Because, you know, you're playing nurse in Shakespeare, anybody can play it. So anyway, but because she's, you know, he's a man in a dress in the subordinate role, she's able to somehow convince them to write the whole show around her character instead of this other person's character. So not only is this woman or this dude taking a role from a woman as the nurse, but then makes herself the star of the show, pushing aside the other person of color female
Julie
star.
Nichols's character.
Yeah, her Julie Nichols's character, as, you know, pushing her to the side, so she's no longer the star. So not
so
only
Michael Dorsey steals two jobs from women.
Yes.
The star of the musical and Sandy Lester's role that should have gone to her.
Yeah. And so, because we left that out, because the Terry Garr character, she was supposed to take that role, and then she didn't get it to him. And so not only did she get that role, she also pushes the star out of the show. So to me, it's clearly like, this is probably written by just like white men, right?
Well,
and very little input whatsoever from
David Yazbek,
from women or queers.
Yeah, I mean, sort of David Yazbek, Robert Horne. I don't know their gender or sexual identity, but you know, I mean, their Wikipedia entries say they're married with kids. So
what are you going to say? So, and you could almost see like the actress who played Juliet. You know, the Jessica Lange character. What's her name again? I'm sorry, I forgot. I don't have it in front of me.
Oh, Julie Nichols.
Julie Nichols.
She's Lily Cooper is
Lily
the actress.
Lily Cooper. You could almost see like she's like in the show, just kind of like I can't believe this person took. He took my role or something, you know?
Well, I think, you know, most of the actors are, like in the film and in the musical Tootsie, are grateful to have any kind of job.
Yeah.
And certainly, you know, the musical shines as a comedy. It, at the expense of transgender people and cross-dress and transvestites, cross-dressers, drag queens. And, you know, it's sunk into me when I'm sitting next to an audience member at, you know, the premiere and somebody's like, you know, it's revealed that she's cross-dressing, and they're like going, ew, gross. And I'm like, lady, it's 2018, and you have a problem with men putting on women's clothes, and you're watching Tootsie, and you're going, ew, gross?
You're in the theater?
You're in a theater? Get the hell out of here, you know? It's madness. And so to me, I was like, I wanted to like this. I really enjoyed the comedy aspects of it, and they can save this show by maybe rewriting you know, one of the characters as to be transgender or a drag queen or something. So we're seeing, not that transgender people and drag queens are interchangeable, but it's having some gender nonconforming element into it outside of a Tootsie to sort of be the mechanism of how Michael Dorsey becomes Dorothy Michaels. Mm-hmm. And maybe her roommate, who in the
film. He's so good, though. He's so good, though.
Like, he's such a great, you know, and I think this actor actually could play a trans or drag queen character, too. And it could take place at a drag bar. Like, we'll get to A Star Is Born later, but, you know, they could modernize this and not treat this as just, you know, the straight white people's club with a token black person thrown in. I just feel like it. The story could really get some legs, and unfortunately, their comedy talents are wasted because of the short-sightedness of wanting it to be all straight white people.
And really giving us a view of, like, an idea, a discussion, things to think about on notions of gender. I don't really feel like we got any of that. Mm-hmm. You know, I think at least in the first, in the movie Tootsie, there was some exploration of that, and there was this fight, and you're not going to do this, you're not going to do that. And it just didn't seem the same. In the Broadway version.
Yeah.
So we'll see what makes it to Broadway, though, because a lot of times they do things here and they're completely different by the time they get to New York.
It is interesting. And we want to share this story with you guys because we understand that these musicals, as they sort of are born and bred here in Chicago's white way. And once they make it to the national stage and go on tour and stuff, they become something very different. And that's why we are giving this kind of feedback, and maybe we sound a little harsher than we should be. And part of it is just because we want to do right by LGBT people, and we want to do right by Tootsie.
Yeah, and it's our responsibility to speak up about this kind of stuff. Yeah. You know, I don't identify as trans, but I definitely identify as queer and gay. So it's like, I would like to see that kind of thing in there. Like, this is our world.
Well, honey, you may not be trans, but you're no stranger to putting on pantyhose.
That's true. If I have to.
Well, I'll do anything to get a role.
And again, like, you know, I'll tell you, it is a funny show. There's lots of great laughs in it.
Yeah. For and sure. Really what I really appreciated, it was like when they start the musical with the other musical being rehearsed, and we're as the audience led to believe that the shitty musical is the musical we're watching. And then somebody stops and says, this musical sucks. And so like the audience is like applauding in agreement. I thought that was really brave. I thought it was a really gutsy choice to make. And I really want to celebrate that and encourage that kind of stuff. And, you know, more of that. I break that fourth wall, mess around with the formalities. It's 2018, people. Brent Kavanaugh is in the... I mean... We have lost our Supreme Court for the rest of our generation if we don't vote in November. Yeah.
We have to vote in November. We have to keep voting. We have to keep voting and voting and voting and don't stop. We have to get them out because you never know what's going to happen. I mean, if they prove Russian collusion, maybe Trump gets impeached. Maybe the people he gets appoints, you know, maybe they resign. Who knows?
The reason Brent Kavanaugh was appointed not was necessarily because he's a right winger, but because he supports the idea of allowing federal the federal president to forgive people for state crimes.
Well, for federal crimes that the state can't go after or something, because now, like, if Trump goes to jail, he, or his kids go to jail, he can't pardon them from the state of New York, because the state of New York looks like they want to prosecute them.
And they're going to.
Yeah. And so he wants to be able to pardon him. And so that's why it was very important for them to get up, get him in, because I guess there's the case is coming up for review very shortly. So that's why they pushed it through so quickly. And I mean, they could have had so many other people that were more palatable, even though they may have been even more conservative. But because he shared this view, that's why they wanted him.
And to me, it's like, it's good to see men waking up to the reality that a lot of women face in terms of, you know, coming forward with sexual harassment or sexual attacks or rape. In the sense that, you know, how many people have, men and women, have accepted Brett Kavanaugh at face value? And even though his temperament is just absolutely ridiculous, and not unfit to be any kind of judge, you know, buy into conspiracy theories, losing his marbles right in front of the national cameras filming him. It really puts into focus the brutal injustice that it means to be a woman in today's world. And I hope that that actually can move us forward as a society. They've done actually polls, and this is the silver lining. This is the good news. If Brett Kavanaugh didn't make it to the Supreme Court judge, it would have invigorated Republicans to go out and vote. But because if Brett Kavanaugh does get appointed, which he did, now that's going to motivate Democrats to vote in record numbers. We'll see.
But I think they still, the Republicans are still claiming that even this whole thing about Kavanaugh has invigorated the base, that they're all fired up and they're ready to take on the midterms too. So as pissed off as we are, they're still pissed off too.
Nothing gets rape Republicans horny like rape. You know, that's what they're about. That's what they've been supporting, and that's who they're celebrating. And I know that sounds brutal for me to say that, but that's where their values are right now.
Well, you know, and when you look at it often, too, is, you know, a sexual assault is often used as an instrument to control people. And when you look at people have thought like corrective rape to cure people of
homosexuality,
you know, and so violent, you know, it's an act of violence and creating violence against people. And I think that that is in many ways part of the Republican plan, is to use this specter of sexual assault as a way to control people.
What I really like to impress upon our listeners is it's not enough to just vote for yourself. When you vote alone, you vote with Trump. Putin is riding in your car. Brett Kavanaugh is giving you a neck massage. You need to vote with another person at the polls. Bring your neighbor, offer to give people rides, do whatever it takes to get an extra person to the polls with you.
And especially you people in the swing states and the swing districts, do whatever it is you can.
I don't think it matters where you are. I think
it definitely matters where you are.
It matters more where you are, but I think people need to remember you need to show up and be counted.
Yeah.
We need every single voice heard in this country. And I think that, you know, people who may be busy on November 6th, you know, they might be
absentee ballots.
There's a lot of solutions out there. Seek them out, please. Please.
So I made it through another episode of Alt for Norga.
Yay!
Well, by the time you guys listen to this, there'll be another episode available. But yeah, my group was up for elimination last week. The red team, it's the curse of the red team. I don't know if you've noticed, but every time the red team has been up, and I think they've always lost.
So for people who are just tuning in, Mark has been cast on a sort of great adventure reality TV show where 12 Norwegian Americans retrace their ancestry in Norway to win $50,000.
And we compete usually in teams for competitions, in competitions based on language, culture, and history. And if your team doesn't do well, then you go up for individual competition against your teammates.
What was so important for you to get on this show?
Well, you know, I was very close with my dad, and I missed him very much, and he was Norwegian-American, and my mom always said that she really kind of fell in love with my dad and knew that she wanted to marry him when she spent time with his family, and his mother was very much the heart of that family. and she was a Norwegian American. And, you know, we didn't really celebrate, like, I didn't realize at the time, like, I never thought we really celebrated many Norwegian things. But now as I've been to Norway, I'm like, oh, that's Norwegian. Oh, that's Norwegian.
Making those potato pancakes? That was from Norway.
You know, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I thought it would be a great adventure. It would be something interesting to do. It was a reality TV show, and I wanted to do it. And it was a nice reality TV show. So many reality TV shows are just, you know, they're filled with jerks and filled with assholes. And this was sweet, and it's sad. Sentimental and interesting
and
wholesome. And I wanted to, you know, it was nice to get out of the country for a while. And it was a chance to win $50,000 and meet my Norwegian relatives.
And I think for you, because you and I work so closely together, you know, that I think it was a great opportunity for you as an individual to stand on your own and find your own voice as an artist, as a personality, as a person. And my mother says, it's like, Mark's been not the same since he got back. And we're seeing this, like, brand new, reinvigorated, inspired
it's
Mark.
A star is born. More of that later.
So, inevitably, when 12 people are competing for a large sum of money like that, and the cameras are rolling, the emotions are going to run high. And in every episode where they're eliminating people, so far we've mostly seen it's kind of like a low-budget Jeopardy, where there's a photograph.
The puzzle board.
There's a photograph on the wall, and it's covered with puzzle pieces. And they're basically playing like a low-budget version of Jeopardy, only it doesn't matter if you choose square number one or square number five, because all the questions are about the same difficulty level. And it's not like if you choose the harder one, you're going to do better than if you choose the easy
one.
Well,
I think some people, because a lot of times, like, it's like some of the categories might be geography, language, it's Norwegian, food. So it all depends, you know what I mean, on what your specialty is. And so I tried to kind of like gear towards some of the food or the geography, because I know that I'm usually typically pretty strong on those kinds of things. But there also, you know, there's strategy involved, because, you know, what's the rule with art? How you don't have something like right in the center.
Sure.
You kind of have it off to the side.
It's the tic-tac-toe quadrant. Yes. When you compose a photograph, most of the information is going to be where the, if you imagine a tic-tac-toe board, it's where the lines intersect is where the information usually is placed.
Yes. And so there's a little bit of a strategy kind of there in that sense, where you try and figure out what that picture is going to be from there. And, you know, I'm a pretty, you know, I went to school for many years in my life, and so I'm a pretty good tester. And even though I might not know the answer to a question, I can do an intelligent guess to what that is. But there's some things that I get very wrong. Although, like, on this last episode, they asked me, like, you know, did the Norwegians introduce salmon sushi to the Japanese? And, you know, the answer was yes, they did. And we did some research on it, and they did. But also, too,
cash me outside. How about that? Amazing.
What?
That they did.
What? Well,
I'm shocked by that.
Are you?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, because we all think of sushi as just, you know, eons and eons old as fishing. But in fact, the Japanese people, until very recently, maybe 20 years ago, were grossed out by the idea of eating raw salmon. And well, so this Norwegian fisheries had a glut of excess salmon to sell to the world. And so they successfully convinced Japanese people that sushi made out of salmon is delicious.
Well, because I guess in Japan, they think of salmon as like whatever salmon they're used to has some kind of parasite in it. And so, but my thinking was like, I would have thought that the Japanese would have come in contact with salmon sushi from the Pacific Northwest, because the Japanese have been living in the Pacific Northwest since like the 1870s or something like that, you know? So
the Japanese culture is very insular and doesn't like a lot of outside influence unless it's their idea.
Yeah. But I'm thinking there's such a glut of salmon there that there must have been people in the 60s and 70s in the Pacific Northwest or in Alaska serving salmon
and
sushi.
So that question came up,
yes,
and you got it wrong.
I got it wrong.
And so then the stakes are high, and it looks like you're about to go home.
Well, there was more questions. I answered every question in the quiz board. I didn't always get it right, but when I got it right, I got it right.
Oh, are you? Let me just pull out some generic Norway trivia questions for you. What's the capital of Norway?
Oslo.
So you got that right. The currency of Norway?
Kroner. I answered that on the first episode.
Norway is not a member of the European Union, United Nations, North Atlantic Treaty Organization, International Organization for for standardization or the World Trade Organization? I don't fucking know about that.
I didn't know it wasn't part of the UN. I know they're not part of the EU because they have oil and they don't want to share their oil money with the rest of Europe.
So you think that...
But they also, like, the UN, you know, the EU passes a lot of resolutions.
Sure.
And Norway follows most of them. And, in fact, they follow more than them than any other European country.
So what would your answer be? Are they... They're not a member of what?
Oh, they're not a member of the EU.
Really? Because I thought they were on the coin.
So they are part of
You're
it.
You're right. They're not a member of the European
Union.
Oh,
so those other options, they were just...
Yeah, they're Scandinavia.
So they're part of NATO, though.
They are part of NATO.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
I thought you were trying to say they weren't part of any of those things.
How large is Norway? Smaller than Florida, about the size of Oregon, a little larger than Massachusetts, bit smaller than Texas, or slightly larger than New Mexico? What state is closest to Norway in terms of geographic
area? It's so long. Give me those options again.
Florida, Oregon, Massachusetts, Texas, or Mexico?
New Mexico. I'm going to say Texas or New Mexico.
The correct answer is New Mexico, slightly larger than New Mexico.
Okay.
People compare it to Minnesota, about the same size and density of Minnesota.
Oh, really?
That's what all the contestants have been saying endlessly.
I think I'm not sure. The population's only like 5 million.
What kind of government does Norway have?
Social democracy.
Democratic Republic. No, a constitutional monarchy. I didn't know that.
Well, they have a king, yes.
I guess they have a queen, too.
They do have a king. Well, it's the king is the head of state and the queen is the wife. And then they have a crown prince, but then they change it so it's no longer, so it's the firstborn child now.
How many people are in Norway? Maine, Alabama, South Dakota, California, or Pennsylvania?
Pennsylvania?
Let's see. 12 million people?
Oh, no, no. Pennsylvania has 12 million? No, no.
Yeah.
No. Whichever
Alabama,
one has,
Maine.
Whichever one has 5 million.
That's Alabama. Ding, okay. Ding, ding. You got it. Who are the leaders of Norway? King Dag, King Harald,
Harald
Ludwig, Edvard, or Olaf?
Harald.
Harald? You got that right, baby. You're getting all the scores right. So there's this idea of a lattice, a mathematical concept discovered by Norwegian mathematician Marius Sophus Lie.
Yeah.
Is the quadratic attention, the algebraic K-theory, hyperbolic links, the theory of continuous symmetry, or theory of relativity?
I'd say B.
Quadratic equation? I say no to that. The correct answer is theories of continuous symmetry.
Which number was that?
The last one. So the idea is basically that there is this fractals kind of are symmetrical infinitely. That comes from the Norwegians.
Well, and they are casting for season 10. So if you are of Norwegian descent and have never been to Norway before, then I encourage you to apply. You can write to me and ask me. I'll send you the link for it because it was really a great experience.
Now, this one Kirsten would know, a Norwegian playwright who created Hedda Gabler, which is considered by many theater critics as the female Hamlet.
Ibsen.
That's right.
Everybody knows that.
Everyone knows Ibsen.
But she doesn't do Ibsen because our friend Kirsten does contemporary.
Oh.
And that's not contemporary.
Norway boasts the most mountains, palm trees, islands, coral reefs, or nuclear power plants.
The most out of what?
Just has the most
mountains?
Of them. Most mountains. It is coral reefs and active volcanoes.
They have coral reefs?
They have coral reefs in Norway. Who knew?
Huh?
Girl, you would have thought... No, well, how we know?
Well, I mean, on mountains, I'm like, well, there's India and stuff like that, but I thought, is it per cap
for those? In 1905, Norway became an independent country from who?
Well, that's an interesting topic. So, actually, they celebrate their Constitution Day, which is May 17th of 1814, because they got their own constitution. They were separate from Denmark, but then they decided their kingdom.
Yeah.
So they had their own government, but they had the Swedish king represent them.
Okay.
And so there was the union of Norway and of Sweden and Norway.
So the answer would be Sweden. You are correct. And last but not least, which side did Norway officially support in World War II?
They were neutral.
That is correct.
Mm-hmm. And the Allies wanted them to remain neutral because they didn't want to tie up any kind of resources in Norway. And so the Nazis pretty much invaded and took over, and there was a resistance, but they didn't have active troops.
And how did the Nazis get out of Norway?
They probably by boats.
No, I mean, once the war ended.
The war ended.
They never got out of Norway.
Well, they had, Victory in Europe Day. The Germans surrendered, and I'm not sure at that point in time, how many troops. I mean, if you were a Nazi and you were in Europe, Norway was probably a pretty good place to stay.
Okay.
So you probably were just kind of hanging out, because you didn't want to be at the front.
So Norway is basically the Argentina of Europe.
No, I mean,
Nazis kind of hid after World War II.
I'm definitely not saying that. Okay. I'm just saying if you were a Nazi, it was probably a pretty good gig to end up in Norway as opposed to France or in Russia and the Russian front.
But were there tribunals? Did they face the war crimes?
I'm sure. Absolutely. Sure. Yeah.
So, in the elimination round, and the reason we're bringing up these questions is because, you are up against three of the most charismatic contestants. So Cheyenne, Kirsten, and Evan. Mm-hmm. Evan, who's best known for playing the only openly gay Star Trek character in any Star Trek anything.
Well, fan fiction.
Fan fiction, but it's still a major production.
It was still a major production based on a script written for Next Generation. Now, I'm talking to Evan. I'm trying to get him to come on the podcast to talk about it, but he didn't have a very good experience doing it.
And
He's not really a sci-fi fan, so I don't think he quite understands just how important this work is to a lot of sci-fi nerds.
Well, it's important to the history of LGBT characters in film and television, and it's the first time in a major franchise you have a representation of an openly gay character set in the future. Mm-hmm. Because Star Trek takes place in the future Earth world, the future universe that we live in. It's not like Star Wars, which is a, fantasy world. Anything can happen, Star Wars.
Right.
Jabba the Hutt's?
Hermaphrodite.
Hermaphrodite. Who knew? Jabba the Hutt. Not male, not female. It's all the above. And sounds just like
Truman Capote.
Capote.
There's one on Star of the Clone Wars that sounds like that. And so, it's important. And it was tough, because it was I liked all of them. And it was, but it's, it got down to the point where it was just it's me or you bitches. And
was it hard to look at your contestants in the face or once you knew you were staying and they were going home? You like them so much.
It's easier when you're the first person to go because you're just okay, I didn't really steal anyone's chance. There's still a chance left, and you see me. So I answered the right question. I went up and I identified what it was up on the board. And then you hear Cheyenne go, oh, fuck. Because she knows at this point in time, she's just I have to send these two people home who I'm close to, or I have to go home myself. And also, he got through, so now I'm going to have to deal with this asshole for the... I'm just kidding. For the next couple of shows.
Was the person that got through?
And I did.
Oh, so you're the asshole that got through.
And so that's the thing. And it was just, it was just really hard, and you could just see the emotion on Cheyenne's face because she was able to figure out what it was too.
She was going, fuck,
and she just knew it was really it was hard. It was emotionally hard for her.
Were you surprised that Norwegian television shows can use cuss words like that? And
they say fuck in the UK too, I believe. So it's Americans, we just have a real. I mean, we say fuck.
Yeah,
on our cable TV shows and whatnot, but we don't really say it on television because, we have archaic rules and we're so,
That's why Netflix looks like softcore lesbian porn. you look at Orange is the New Black and half of the airtime is the characters having sex with each other graphically.
So, yeah. And what the next episode that's coming out, and so by the time you're listening to this, it might actually already be out, is going to be one. I think it's going to be one of my favorite episodes because we met this really interesting group of people, the Vilmal Athletic Club, who's just this group of like farmers and guys working in the oil fields and in this rural town, and they put on this big festival, and so we got to make a float.
And the fashion is very interesting and a very important part of the show.
Yes, the fashion is very important. So the festival is kind of like a retro festival, which I didn't really realize that at first. So people kind of dress like it's the 60s, 70s, but kind of, or 80s. Like, I don't know. It's weird. Like, it was kind of nebulous. You don't really know. So it's goofy outfits. And so this group of guys, they all got together to make a float for the parade about 10 years ago. And they had to come up with a name for an organization. One of the guys was a former bodybuilder. So he's just like, let's call ourselves an athletic club. And his sister was marrying this other dude who was a bodybuilder. And so they made their first parade float, and they won the parade because people just absolutely loved it. And so for the past 10 years, they've won every time except I think like 1 year. And so this year they helped us out to make a parade float. And so we were divided into two teams again, red and blue. I was on the blue team. Thank God.
Because you're not a Republican.
And so I've been on the red team twice, though. Uh-oh. Remember that.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we made a parade float. And I really loved our parade float. It was super cute. The concept was for the parade was auction and recycle. And so we did an animal auction, and we made animals out of recycled materials.
And it's adorable. And then you have this idea of like, you know, transforming a paint can into a rooster
a bathtub into a cow, you know,
those kind of things.
Drum into a muskox, you know.
And that's really great. And you'll get to see that all on the next episode. So you can watch it only on a computer, dplay.nor.no.
Yeah.
And then you just search for Alt for Norge and just ignore all the prompts like, are you a Norwegian person? Then get out of here.
And you can't have ad blocker on.
No,
but I think it's kind of funny, too, is because like this town, they have their own little culture. So they were teaching us all these like weird little sayings that they would say, like, you can't get a woman, they call it like a pussy, they call it moose, unless you have like a snooze, like, which is like chew, or like there was other ones where like you'll never get laid unless you wear like white tennis socks or something. Like, it was bizarre. And it was fun about that, it was I was wearing our t-shirt that says like, not shaving gives me more time for misbehaving.
Yeah, come on brand. On brand.
Which
I
you
appreciate
can get in our
that.
Store feastofun.com/store.
As
I was looking
on
to translate
Norge.
It into Norwegian, but I don't know if it lands correctly.
But the one fashion item that everybody's going to be talking about is the mesh shirts that the Norwegian ex-bodybuilders were wearing, which is very reminiscent of some of those embarrassing shirts that you may have ordered in the 1980s from International Mail.
Yeah. Yes. But, you know, I've seen them, like, in some ways they're making a comeback. I saw somebody at, or maybe they just never went away. I saw somebody at the Gay Pride Parade this year.
They always wear them.
Yeah, they're always wearing them. And I saw somebody, like, on the cover of some gay magazine still wearing them. And I'm just like, to me, they're just kind of, like, ridiculous.
They kind of look like, I guess the sacks. If have you ever, you know, bought onions or potatoes on a sack made out of cotton? Imagine if you turn that sack into a shirt. That's kind of like the idea behind it.
Yeah.
And maybe that's what they did initially back in the day. They just took, you know, old sacks of potatoes or onions and turned it into fashion.
Well, I think that they thought it would like help them breathe, like because you're sweating because you're working out, but also like will show the body a little bit. And you can see us like questioning the guy, like, what's up with these shirts?
Well, I do know, like, when I'm wearing a t-shirt and sometimes I like, if I'm doing a very long workout, I want to switch shirts just to get a dry shirt because the shirt gets so wet and then gets so cold that my muscles start tightening up while I'm working out. That's not good.
You want hot muscles.
You want those muscles hot.
So check that out. Let me know how you guys like it. One TV show we just started watching was Alyssa Edwards, Dancing Queen, just debuted on Netflix. And, you know, this is a show that she's been working on for a number of years. She and RuPaul had tossed around, like, probably the next season after she got off of Drag Race.
Sure.
They were tossing that around. So it's nice to see that a queen is working on something and getting her ideas and passions out there and making this kind of incredible art. Now, it's very much is like Dance Moms. So if you're a fan of Abby Lee, you'll probably really like this show.
And it takes place in Alyssa Edwards' dance studio in Mesquite, Texas. And what's really great about the series is to show this kind of character that Alyssa Edwards is comments on the man behind Alyssa Edwards and his handling of these families and these kids, and their careers are all hanging on his skills as a teacher, as a choreographer, as a captain. And so, now it's all up on Netflix and you can watch it. I feel like the show kind of falls apart in the sense that it does rely a lot on the vocabulary from Dance Moms, and it doesn't really understand how to integrate Alyssa Edwards into the world, you know, into Alyssa Edwards' world in Mesquite, Texas. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of interesting because there's a lot of potential for a Hurricane Bianca kind of scenario there.
Yeah.
Right, where, you know, Alyssa Edwards come back to her small little Texas town as a world-famous drag queen and sort of comes into conflict with some of the people who may not celebrate or understand her. Mm-hmm. Instead, it's very much about the kids and about the moms and the dancing. And has tangentially not much to do with Alyssa Edwards and, you know, Justin outside.
That we've seen so far. Yeah. But we've only seen the first episode. But I like what I've seen so far. And she really is like, what she really shines is she's just sitting on that chair because she's just amazed with herself. Yeah. You know what I mean? She's always just so amazed. Like when she's talking, like her doing her talking heads in drag, her mind is always blown. And I just love that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, it's stupid and it's silly. It's fun.
Definitely. You know, if you're a fan of RuPaul's Drag Race as we are, and, you know, certainly check out Alyssa Edwards Beyond Belief Dance Company, shining on Netflix. It's a lot easier to catch than Drag Race if you don't have a cable subscription.
That's true.
So that's going to be a lot of fun, and certainly I look forward to seeing kind of where the series goes from there. A Star Is Born, Lady Gaga's update, or Bradley Cooper's update, of the iconic Judy Garland film, then Barbra Streisand film, has hit theaters. And, you know, one spoiler that I'd like to impress upon our listeners is that if you have a very strong personal history or struggle with suicide or recovery, I urge you to skip this film.
Or just be prepared.
Be prepared. It's a trigger warning, but I think that seeing it in a large film, it knocks you out in a way that you're just not prepared. You're expecting something a little bit more lighthearted, sort of like All About Eve or Showgirls even. Yeah. But this film takes us in a really dark, dark right turn towards the second half of the film. And I just feel like for somebody who cares so much about suicide prevention and recovery, I feel like it does a disservice to Lady Gaga's work.
The first thing was like when I kind of knew about the ending. So in the original movies, you know, it's a couple, they get together. He's the star. He recognizes the star in this other person. She starts to eclipse him. He delves into a world of, you know, alcohol abuse
and drugs
and then dies. And in this, they change the ending a little bit where it is alcohol dependency and drugs, but then it turns to suicide. And I knew that there was going to be some kind of difference, and I didn't know that it was going to be that. And so in my mind, I just thought to myself that it was kind of reckless in that sense, because Lady Gaga has devoted much of her career into being an advocate for young LGBT people, many of whom were contemplating suicide. She became part of that national dialogue around suicide. And so I feel that it was reckless of her in some ways to do this film and not have some kind of like, hey, kids, I know we spent a lot of time talking about this kind of stuff, but you need to be prepared because there's going to be kids that are going to go see this movie. They're going to see it because Lady Gaga's in it. They're not going to be prepared for what's going to happen in this film. And it's going to be emotionally hard for them. And they may not have the resources to deal with it. And in that sense, I think it's kind of reckless of her. And I think that it's like, did she forget who she was? Did she even care in the first place? I've got questions.
It's amazing the way the human mind sort of like compartmentalizes trauma of the past to help you survive and move forward. And so for me personally, and I'm not ready yet to talk about my own experiences with these things, but it certainly brought up a lot of difficult feelings, memories, and emotions for me. And it really hit me extremely hard and sent me into, you know, a depressed funk for several days after seeing that film. It's part of the reason why we haven't even put out a show. It was just like I was really having to sort my feelings about this film. And I urge extreme
caution.
I'm the kind of person like, you know, go see whatever go see Showgirls. It's a chaotic, madcap, insane romp. But this film, because of its intimacy, because of the power of the extraordinary acting of Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga, I urge extreme caution for this.
And also, too, it's like, you know, if you feel like it once the movie starts taking that dark turn, stuff like that, go ahead and walk out. You know what I mean?
You saw what you needed to see.
You saw what you needed to see. There is, you know, the beginning of it, it is very beautiful. There's a wonderful scene where she's leaving work. It's in the opening credits and she's leaving. And it seems very Judy Garland inspired.
Sure.
She's walking up up through an alley, basically, from a garage and doing a little dance number. And you're like, oh, that reminds me of Judy. And then she's performing in a drag club.
With Shangela and Willem,
yes.
Who in some ways are sort of like token characters. They don't really advance the plot. Mm-hmm. They don't really add to anything except to make Lady Gaga seem, her character of Allie, mm-hmm. seem cool in the mm-hmm. film.
Right. And then also, and so when she's performing that number, she's singing La Vie en Rose in French, but there's, you know, when she lays down in the bar and looks at Bradley Cooper, there's very definitely like a very Barbara Streisand kind of look about her. And so it was nice to see kind of like those salutes to the end of it. Now, what I also think is kind of interesting too is like, so she's at this drag club, she's singing, and most of the other girls are lip syncing, right? And then they're all in the back of the dressing room. Bradley Cooper goes back because he's so like, I've got to meet her. So he goes back there to meet her. And then Shangela shoos all the gay people out of the room, let the straight people have the room to themselves. Now, I understand that they're trying to advance the plot and stuff like that, but it's kind of like you're removing gay people from a gay space for these straight people. It's very...
Attach it, people. Gay people, can I get your attention? Two straight people are talking. We need to give them their space. Thank you. I know this is a gay bar. This is mm-hmm. the gay bar's drag queen's dressing mm-hmm. room. We need to vacate the space so that two people who don't normally regular perform at this club, mm-hmm. who don't have no say in the matter, Lady Gaga, you know, she said earlier in the film, she's allowed to perform there. Rare at sometimes, not as a regular, just mm-hmm. as occasionally. And Bradley Cooper obviously is some white entitled man who happens to be a celebrity. can magically get Shangela to say the opposite of what she would have said mm-hmm. in real life. She would have been like, oh, I'm really glad that you got yourself some trade, Miss Gaga. Get the fuck out of here so we can continue taking our makeup off. And
doing lines of cocaine.
Lines of cocaine. Thank you very much, Mr. Cooper. Oh, you have some cocaine? Then you can stay.
You want me to do it off your dick? I don't mind.
Yeah, that's the real life Star is Born. That was what I was hoping to see. Mm-hmm. Instead, we see Willem and Shangela's, you know, talents being wasted. And to me, I'm like, you know, both Willem and Shangela are extraordinary actors. Can someone please cast them in a role that's not themselves? I mean, Willem can do more than just Willem. Shangela can do more than just Shangela. And I have to say, I'd like to see Lady Gaga play another character other than Lady Gaga. You know, even when she transforms into the star, it's like this, low-budget crossbreed of Whitney Houston and Jennifer Lopez. And the really, you know, besides the tear jerking moments of the film, really what made me distressed the most was just Lady Gaga's garish orange hair that almost broke my contact lenses if they were made out of glass.
They ripped.
There was a lot of weird choices in this film. What is A Star Is Born about? Is it about the cost of fame? Is it all about Eve? Is it ships passing in the night? It didn't seem like the story was about anything. And we never see what is making Bradley Cooper's character fall from grace in the first place. You know, Mark's drank and spilled more drinks than he snorts in this movie. The film just doesn't grasp the struggle that people go through in recovery, mm-hmm. what their friends and families have to deal with.
Right.
And if somebody who cares so much about recovery, cares so much about suicide prevention, like Lady Gaga, I'm disappointed in her being involved in this project and not saying, you know what? This is our film. We can do whatever we want to. We can rewrite the story. It can still be a tragedy, but it can be a tragedy where we get to that point of the end of the film in the first half. And then we start exploring more
what goes
other,
beyond.
What goes beyond, you know? It's like,
it doesn't need to end with that. And it didn't need to end with a suicide. It could have ended, you know, it could have been like how Whitney and Bobby Brown, that kind of thing. You know what I mean?
It could have been anything. And you don't need to follow note for note, beat for beat, when you remake a film. And I think Lady Gaga is really emotionally attached to the careers of some of these extraordinary female entertainers like Whitney Houston, Jennifer Lopez, certainly, you know, Barbara Streisand and Judy Garland. And, you know, Lady Gaga in interviews says how much Barbara Streisand loves her and approves her. And who doesn't love Lady Gaga? I mean, Lady Gaga is electric when she sings anywhere. And if you're a fan of Lady Gaga and you love her music, but you have a difficult time dealing with issues of recovery or suicide, walk out right after she gets on Saturday Night Live. The film's over. That's not worth seeing the rest of the film.
Well, you do want to see Bradley Cooper pee his pants, though, don't you?
I think that happens. That does happen, yeah. So after Bradley Cooper pees in his pants.
Because you want to see that. Because I saw it like when it first started. I had hit Fausto. I'm like, look, look, look.
And, you know, there's some really wonderful humorous moments out of the tragic moments in the film. And the film can't decide whether it is going in this sort of campy, fun, you know, electric direction, or is this going into this melodramatic tragedy? And I think it just pulls the rug from under us in a way that's really unsatisfying. I'm not against unhappy endings, but I feel like it just hits us over the head so fast at the very end of the film that I'm deeply concerned about the film triggering people to do harm to themselves. And I usually never say that about any film or TV show or anything, but I just feel
different.
Like this film really hit us in a way that just felt wrong.
Yeah.
And to insincere. Me,
immediately, I was said, the first thing I said to Fausto, I'm like, this ending seems, you know, considering Lady Gaga's history with LGBT youth and suicide prevention, it just seems very reckless. And, you know, because it's like I knew there was a different ending, but I wasn't prepared for this ending. And, I, you know, there's how many kids are might going to go out and see it? I don't, or maybe Lady Gaga's old and tired and they don't even care about her anymore.
Yeah, maybe she's a has-been. You know, and this is why she's trying to appeal to people more our age who remember A Star Is Born with Streisand and Judy Garland and want to see a modern remake of it.
What did you think of Andrew Dice Clay as the dad?
You know, I love seeing comedians playing dramatic roles. I think comedians make some of the best actors because acting is about music. It's about understanding the beats and the tones and the nuances of human conversation. And comedians really, especially successful ones, really understand that well. And certainly, you know, Dave Chappelle shines in this film, and you know, Andrew Dice Clay are both, I feel, sort of like Shangela and Willem. Just everybody, it's Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper's film, and no one else's. And everybody else is just, you know, token.
Sam Elliott, you don't think that he had?
I feel Sam Elliott was important as well. You know, but it just feels like everybody else, it feels like we're the third wheel on a date with Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga. And I'm like, listen,
and they won't even suck my dick.
This is what happens when, you know, celebrities get too into their heads. They come up with these ridiculous projects so they can fuck. And I'm like, Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper, why don't you guys just get a hotel room and get it done with? And don't drag us into your...
Of
course they have. I'm sure they had sex with each other.
You don't know that.
I'm pretty sure that they did. And Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga talk about it as they went on a date together.
Oh.
And they went back to her house and she cooked for him and they made beautiful music together.
And that's a metaphor for having sex.
Or, you know, sitting at the piano. And when you're a musician, you know, making music together is a form of having sex.
It's interesting, you know, they talk in the relationship between Bradley Cooper and Sam Elliott. You know, Sam Elliott plays his older brother, who was, I guess, at one point in time was a musician, and he stole his voice, you know? And I kept wondering, like, Bradley Cooper, I'm like, why does he sound the way he does? And I guess he literally did learn how to imitate Sam Elliott.
Yeah.
And that when he first met Sam Elliott, they had dinner and talked about like him coming on this role. And he's just like, you know, just, you know, it's like the part of the concept is I stole your voice. And like, this is how I sound like when I'm talking like you do. And he's just like, oh, my God, you really do sound like me. Like, how do I even know the difference? It's kind of crazy.
Yeah. So. And, you know, I think Sam Elliott actually has been a voiceover actor.
Oh, he's been an actor for years.
For years and years. And, you know,
he's always had a crazy mustache.
Yeah. And, so he's been on The Simpsons.
He's been everywhere. So what's your, when you go to San Francisco, Foster, what's your number one complaint about when you travel to San Francisco?
The poop. Everywhere. Poop. Human poop.
For whatever reason, people in San Francisco love to shit on the street.
Because there's no places for them to shit.
There's no places for them to go. And so there's a lot of homeless people in San Francisco because the rest of the nation, the United States, will find a homeless person and then offer them a bus ticket to San Francisco.
That may be the case. Happens. That's a factor. But San Francisco is one of those places that unless you buy a Starbucks double mocha frappuccino, there are no public bathrooms. Mm-hmm.
And so people do just shit on the street everywhere.
Whereas in Chicago, now, we have a lot of opportunities for people to... Mm-hmm. relieve themselves in places, you know, most major urban environments have that. I don't know why San Francisco, you know, missed the boat on that. And maybe I'm just not seeing something. Maybe there's a reason why, but it's, there's just not, when you gotta pee, there is no place to pee in San Francisco unless you buy a drink.
Maybe I'll just walk into a bar or restaurant or McDonald's and I just use the bathroom.
I say, you know, they're like, sir, I said, call the police. I'm going to pee.
Well, anyway.
Yeah.
A guy named Sean Miller, he moved to San Francisco after college, and he was just like, he was, I guess, grossed out by the amount of fecal matter on the street. So he developed an app called Snap Crap. So you take a picture of the shit or wherever it is.
That's
it could be
amazing.
It could be the dirty needles. It could be the shit, whatever. And like they'll send, I guess, you know, it'll go to like 311 and people come and clean it up. And it's just, you know, it's weird when you go to San Francisco, you're like walking down streets or up steps and you're just like, oh my God, this is like enormous pile of human shit.
Yeah.
You know, it's just crazy.
There was this one, cause I guess there's just long staircase and you know, there's all these little hills and streets. Mm-hmm. And Mark and I were staying with a friend of ours, Manish. Mm-hmm. He, you know, in order to get to the train or something, we had to go down these flight of stairs. And, you know, there's no way to escape it.
Yeah.
Because the flight of stairs takes about 5 minutes to walk down.
Yeah, you're doing hundreds of steps.
And in the middle of the flight of stairs is just this giant pile of shit with flies going all over it. And you're just like covering your face with your shirt and running down the stairs as fast as you can, mm-hmm. you know,
and hoping you don't run into another pile of shit.
Exactly. And it's almost like, you know, I don't know, Raiders of the Lost Ark with a ball rolling behind you. Only it's poop.
No, San Francisco. Poop.
I love San Francisco. I love the history of San Francisco. I just wish they put a little bit more money into making things easier for everybody who lives there.
You know, they have so much wealth around there.
There's so much gratuitous, enormous amounts of wealth. And, you know, there's a lot of endless discussion about this. And for such a progressive society and political leadership, and some of the most progressive corporations are based out of San Francisco, mm-hmm. You know, we can do better. Mm-hmm. We ought to do better. We will do better. I trust the people of San Francisco to resolve their human rights crisis.
I think so, too.
Poop crisis.
Well, let's add a little nicer note. In Minnesota, people have been calling up the police because they've noticed that a lot of the birds in town are drunk.
The birds.
And the birds are drunk. They're flying in the windows.
I thought you were talking about Bert and Ernie. Like
they're confused. I guess they had an early frost up in northern Minnesota, and so that made like a lot of the fruits and berries go into ferment to start fermenting.
So how do the birds sing when they're drunk?
I don't know, like any other drunks, like a bird on a wire.
Here, pitchy, pitchy.
Like a drunk in a midnight
here,
choir.
Pitchy, pitchy, pitchy.
What's that from?
That's from Carol Burnett.
What's she doing?
When she's drunk and she's like, here, pidgey, pidgey, pidgey.
Oh, she's feeding the pigeons.
You know, actually, if you feed marijuana seeds to canaries, they sing gorgeous.
Really? Is that right?
That's the rumor.
Huh. So, yeah, the fruit makes its own alcohol and they start eating the fruit and then they just get drunk.
like monkeys in those island resort towns where they figured out how to drink the leftover cocktails the tourists leave at the beach.
I think squirrels get drunk too.
Listen, everybody needs to get a little tipsy every now and then, you know?
Maybe Jesse's ready for a beer. I think they have a beer for dogs
for
now.
Beer?
Yeah.
What does it do? Is like he poops all over himself?
No, they have beer for dogs now, but it doesn't have any alcohol in it. I don't think it just, you know, it tastes yeasty.
One good political news. The U.S. Senate unanimously voted to stop airlines from removing passengers from overbooked planes. Directs the Federal Aviation Administration to set minimum seat sizes. Mm. So none of this like dragging somebody off the plane because they sold too many tickets.
Mm-hmm.
Thank God. Some common sense.
I was tired of watching those videos. I was tired of watching those videos on YouTube of people getting
beaten up by flight attendants and security guards. You know, as if flying on an airplane is not stressful enough with the high prices and the overcrowding and the poor air quality and the sanitation issues and, you know, and on and on and on. Now, at least we don't have to worry about being beaten up just because we bought a seat on a flight that was overbooked. So that's good. This is good news, you know.
So I mean, it's not all bad.
I want everybody to go vote, please. You remember that the first step into sucking, I'm sorry, the first step to being good at stuff is sucking at stuff.
So don't now pull we're sucking back. At stuff, and now we're going to get better.
That's right. And so we're going to get better, and we're going to do better. And remember, the first step to being good at things is to suck them.
Mm-hmm.
Suck at them.
Like maybe you've been sucking a long time because you haven't supported this podcast.
That's maybe.
Maybe.
You've been sucking at supporting Feast of Fun.
And now you won't suck anymore because you can go to feastoffun.com/plus and sign up for a plus account, which gives you access to years and years of archives of interviews with some of the top comedians, drag queens, writers. We did an interview with Terry Garr, who was in the original Tootsie, and she talked about her iconic line of "I'm responsible for my own orgasm." She talked about her career in Star Trek.
They were supposed to make a Star Trek series based on her.
Yeah.
I would have loved to see
that. I would have loved to see it. Maybe we can bring that back.
Yeah, she's still around, honey.
She's still around.
So if you want to give us a one-time donation, go to feastoffun.com/donate. And, of course, we have a fabulous clothing line. Get your Feast of Fun t-shirt at feastoffun.com/store.
Mm-hmm.
Not shaving gives me more time for misbehaving. I mean it, honey.
Mm-hmm.
We want to thank you guys so much for listening to us and sticking with us.
And I'm Mark Fillion.
I'm Fausto Fernos.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
You're afraid you pitch it. Mm-hmm.